Good afternoon, everyone. This is Jeannie on the Let's Grill Jeannie call. It's February the 13th. Welcome, everyone. I have Jermaine with me. I'm sure Paul Timmons will be on the line, as well as Jeff Lindahl as soon as he's free. So we hope we have a lot of questions today and that the call will be important to you all. I want to welcome all the new Mastery students from Dallas and Phoenix. Welcome aboard. We had a lot of them, and we're anxious to get you all assigned your coaches and work with you on a regular basis. Let's tell you about the upcoming events. We have the Sacramento Immersion coming up February the 16th, 17th, and 18th. We have the Dallas Immersion February 23rd, 24th, and 25th, and the Phoenix Immersion March 2, 3, and 4. We have the Elevate, which is Dave training a bunch of people on personal health, wealth, and business. That is March the 5th and the 6th, and it's downtown Boston. And we have Dave teaching the business building coaching program March 14th and 15th in Rockland. And we have the Private Money taught by Bob Bowman March 16th, 17th, and 18th, also in Boston. And I'll see all of you at all three of those. And Jeff will see you all at the Immersions, except for one is being taught by Faradun. He'll do an awesome job. He is an extraordinary underwriter. So I'm sure you'll enjoy spending time with him. And Jermaine and Paul will be in the office for any assistance that you need there. We want to give a couple of high fives. One is to Mark Magnuson from Tampa, Florida. He recently purchased a 14-unit complex in Tampa, Florida, and he has another property under contract. Also, Suzanne Fortune closed on an 8-unit as well as 37 self-storage facilities on the same lot, and she is our investor of the week, and we give her a certificate in recognition of her successes. She also has another property in Alabama she's putting under contract today. So she's really flying high, and we thank her for her participation, and we know that she's going to share the wealth and knowledge that she has received with all of her friends and family. Okay, do we have an operator on the call?
Yes, you do, Jeannie. This is Lillian. I'll
Lillian.
Be the operator.
How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Good. Want to tell people how to ask a question?
Of course, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. Star zero for questions, please. Thank you.
So what will happen is Lillian will queue you up. She'll take your name. She'll let me know who's on the line, and then you can freely ask your question or multiple questions. I don't care how many you ask. I know I'll have answers, and where I don't have answers, Dave is one door away. I can ask him. So is anybody in the queue yet, Lillian?
Yes, we actually, our first question comes from Wesley. Wesley, please go ahead.
Thank you. Jeannie, I really don't have a question as much as I want to thank you for your support and what you've given, and the fact that I just got off a phone call with my partner, Dan, and your sponsor, Jim. And I sat back and listened for 45 minutes while these two were talking about deals and structures and all the things and the money and the and just stuff. And I went, my God, as much as I've learned and I've been taught, I'm a newbie. I mean, this was just an eye-opener of all the things. And I think we're going to be able to move forward, and I'm excited about that. And
I'm
then I've got a mea culpa. Yeah. Oh, boy. Listen, this 157 units in the greater Atlanta area is
awesome.
Yeah.
So Jimmy's going to sponsor you?
It it looks like it. He's going to be looking at the numbers and getting back, but the phone call went very well and the conversation between the two. As I said, I just sat back and listened for 45 minutes while these two guys were going back with numbers and facts. And my partner has done a lot of small units in Southern California and Oregon, and now is looking to get bigger, and he has one thing in South Carolina, and it was kind of what he would call an A-, and he said he really misses the upside. He likes the C's.
Yeah.
And this one that we're looking at is a C+, and how we still have meat on the bone and can go in and do upside. And that's exciting. But I've got a mea culpa. You sent me the information for me to fill out for the Elevate, and I must have dumped it. So I need you to resend me that form. So,
I will be happy to. I'll send that to you today.
But, thank you. I just wanted to thank you for all your support and everything that you give us on your end. And it looks like...
My pleasure.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Thank you, Ashley. Anybody else, Lillian?
Yes, up next we have Felipe. Felipe, please go ahead.
Hello. Hi, I'm Felipe out of Phoenix. How are you guys?
I'm doing excellent. How are you?
Great. So we came out of the event in Phoenix, and I had a chance to look at some properties that, I contacted some people and got some listings. And when you get the flyer, and obviously, you know, one of the things I really liked about the training is it seemed very black and white, where if a deal met the Holy Trinity, we're good. And if it doesn't, then we obviously have to, you know, work on the asking price to make sure it either fits or the numbers don't work out. My question is, when you get the flyer, and obviously the numbers on the flyer 90% of the time are not the actual numbers, they're more like a pro forma. So it's kind of hard to judge a building based on kind of basically fake numbers. How do you actually get, like, when you're talking to the listing agent and talking to the people, how do you actually get the real numbers to do your side of the deal before you enter the LOI?
So what you're going to do is find some commonality with that broker and build some trust, because what he's doing, he's testing you to see how far he can go without giving you any information at all, because he's not sure you can close the property or not. So this is a broker that's very experienced. He has a lot of clients. He doesn't want to waste his time, or he has been burnt in the past, and now he's asking for proof of funds letter before he gives you any financials on the property. But if you find some commonality with him and let him know, listen, if I find the right deals, I got backing. I can get this deal closed and you're going to get paid. So the more you can let him know that you're serious, you're not just asking him for numbers so that you can shop it around. You're looking to get something that cash flows, meets the Holy Trinity, get it closed, and you're coming back to him to find another property. He's going to feel a lot more better about it. So what you may want to do is you may want to, you know, find that commonality. If he likes to golf and you like to golf, ask him what kind of clubs he uses or what kind of balls he uses, whatever. Or if he lives in the vicinity of where you live, you may want to meet him for a cup of coffee or a sandwich. Other than that, what I would do is I would go on to besttransactionfunding.com and get a couple of proof of funds letters for the entire purchase price of the property. That kind of shows them that you took the extra step in going out and trying to get yourself qualified. You can also let them know that you realize that your net worth may not be the net worth equal to the mortgage amount, but you will get a sponsor that will qualify, and maybe you can co-sponsor the deal. So you educate him on who you are and what you're about, and you're not about to waste time just flipping through properties, that you want him to get paid as well as you want to do right by your investors.
Got it. And what was the name of that website one more time?
Best transactionfunding.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Okay, up next we have Tracy. Tracy, please go ahead.
Hi, Tracy from Orange County here, and I'd like to thank all of you at the Lindahl Group for the amazing support. Philippe's question was spot on and was actually directly related to the question I had, and my question has been answered, but I have another one.
Okay.
Any experience with continuing education credits for the Lindahl courses for taxes? I thought that would be timely.
Well, I believe that all of our educational classes are write-offs, so you can write off education on your taxes. If you're looking for continuing education to renew your real estate license or anything like that, I use that for mine every single – we renew ours every year, and I use our classes as my continuing education.
I get it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, up next we have Christy. Christy, please go ahead.
Oh, hi. This is Christy from San Francisco. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, Christy. What's up?
I'm good, thank you. So good. I have questions about buying bulk condos. You know, is that something, I mean, what should we look for, and is there lenders that comfortable with lending on that type of a purchase?
So you're talking about condos, like maybe the property has 100 condos that have already been converted.
Right, and they selling. Yeah, and they selling.
Are they separately deeded?
They are.
Well, that could be a gold mine for you. It could be a gold mine for you, but if you're buying them as, say, an apartment with condo conversion already done, that you can sell as one-offs. But if it's already been done and they're selling to you as a bulk package, they're kind of taking most of the profit out of it. You got to find some other
value. But they're not selling the whole. I see. But they're selling just part of the complex. Let's say there's like 100 units, and they're just selling 30 units. You know, they don't sell like 100% because the other units are owned by different owners, and so they're not selling the whole. Like 100%
of the. So it's like buying a bunch of single family houses, and you have to figure out if there's negotiation room in there. So if you have a potential buyer, well, what are the going rates for others in that market, and are you going to make money turning them over?
Well, actually, the cash flow and the price per door is the same as the apartment, but the good thing is we don't have to take care of the exterior maintenance, and utility are all separate, so we don't have to pay for that as well. So the expenses is very low, but I don't know if it's from financing perspective, it's kind of, you know, easy to get financing, because I know, like, usually what lender, like, apartment. Or,
well, take down this phone number. He can help you with anything. His name is Eric Stewart, and his number is 321-615-8919, and he welcomes all calls, and he will assist you with anything he can help you with.
Okay, great. And then for the numbers, like for the underwriting, which is if it's, you know, right now, the package that I'm looking at, first year it'd be like 10% cash on cash, and then actually first year be 15% cash on cash, and that's without doing any renovation because the unit has $100 under like the rent.
Okay.
So if we just if all numbers look good, then it should be good, right? I mean, there's no other concern other than it's just individual condos sold together.
Yeah. And why is he selling just 30 of them?
Oh, because that's all he has in that complex. Because the other units are owned by different owners.
But did he own all 100 at one time?
No.
Interesting. It sounds like it might have been a broken partnership. And like maybe he owned 50 and his partner owned 50 and they separated ways. Partner already sold his and he sold part of his. And that's what it sounds like to me. But who knows? It could be anything.
Yeah. I see. I didn't, you know, when the broker told me the number, it sounded like so good, right? So I didn't even care to ask why they sell it. Just send it to me and then I'll get back to you. But I didn't even ask why they sell it. That's a good point.
Yeah, and you want to make sure that the value is there, even though the cash and cash return is there. What's the value in buying them? Would you be buying them individually or buying them as an LLC and then subdividing that LLC to sell them as one-offs? That's something I would find out because it could be expensive.
Okay.
You're doing 30 individual closings.
I see. So just make sure if for the exit strategy, if I want to sell them individually, I can do that, right?
Right.
Okay, so that's more with holding, how to hold the title, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can ask Eric Stewart, too. You can ask Eric what he advises.
Okay.
He's really smart about that stuff.
Okay. He seems very busy. I mean, I reached out to him before, but it took him like a couple of days to get back. So, but that deal,
Doesn't hurt to keep calling. Doesn't hurt to keep calling. He's worth it. He will call you back.
Call the real estate broker that has the deal and ask him.
Thank you.
Christy, call up the real estate broker that has the deal and ask them who they recommend for finance.
That question.
Well, good luck.
Thanks.
Call me if you need me.
Oh.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Bye.
Okay, up next we have Andrew. Andrew, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Andrew and Raven from Dallas, and a quick question for you. We are starting to build up a database of different brokers, investors, and trying to have a system in place where we can continue to reach out to them on every 7 to 14 days, depending on situation. And do you have any suggestions for like a CRM program or anything to keep in touch or notify you when to reach back out to people?
Years ago, I used to use ACT. I used Act 5. We had Act 4 as a real estate broker, and then I went to Act 5 just for my own follow-through, and that worked really well, and it's inexpensive. I mean, there's a lot of CRMs that you can get ticklers for. Maybe Jeff might have a couple of ideas. Jeff, are you on the line? He may not be. He might be working on something. Jermaine, do you have any ideas on CRMs?
Not in particular, Jeannie. I would have to look that up and email you guys, Andrew, the information.
We use Infusionsoft here. I know that Manage Pro is another inexpensive database that you can set up reminders on. I'm not sure of the cost. I know when we had it, it was not expensive, but it may have, excelled from when we had it. We've had Infusionsoft for about 10 years now, so that does just about everything, but it costs megabucks too. But I think ACT is something that a lot of people like, but somebody else that's on this call may have something they use, and they will help you.
Okay, so, perfect. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, up next we have Alicia. Alicia, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie.
You're going to have an answer, aren't you, Alicia? Are you going to help them with a database software?
No. Actually, that's not why I called, but I just use Excel. But
you use Excel? Does it send you automatic reminders?
What's that? Does any automatic reminder, you can set that up. You can set that up in a special site program that is kind of a calendar type thing.
Oh, but well, maybe Andrew will call back in, give his phone number, and then you and he can reach out and you can teach him how to do that. So what can I help you with today?
Well, I have a couple of questions. One, I wanted to make a remark on the woman who just called in for the condos in San Francisco. She might check into that being fractured condos. And I learned the hard way on that one, and that was that some of those condos might be selling because they don't have majority say-so about what happens in the association.
Mm.
And they won't be able to get very far on implementing different rules and regulations for those condos, for those apartments. Some of them are already condos. They're already sold to other individual people, and those individual people most likely have the majority say of what happens to that property. So that's just kind of something she might check into. Just ask the broker if these are fractured condos. Because
good information,
will have
Alicia.
Yeah, she'll have limited ability to make changes or do anything with those condos other than trying to sell them to somebody else like this person is trying to sell them to her. So that was kind of a hard lesson learned for me. Luckily I didn't go into contract with it, but I spent a lot of time and money investigating this and found out that, oh, geez, you know, you can't go very far. Anyways, but I really wanted to call and ask how RUBS works. Is RUBS just a single meter and you charge the tenants a certain amount for the utilities? Is that how that works?
RUBS is a resident utility billback system. And what happens is you have an outside company sending postcards to your tenants telling them what they have to pay. A lot of times, we didn't use RUBS when I bought our property. What we did, we called the water department because that's the only thing they had to pay was water. And we got an average cost for a one-bedroom, two-bedroom, three-bedroom unit. And it ended up being $25, $30, and $35. So you cannot make any money on a utility. It's against the law. So we charge everybody $24, $29, $34. And we charge them that before they paid their monthly rent. Because what happens with a billback system is the RUBS will send them a postcard. And 99% of the time, the tenants say they didn't get the postcard, even though the post office will say we delivered them all. They're color-coded, and the tenants will say, we didn't get it. We'll catch you next month. So the property is paying for their utilities because they fail to do it. So that's not cost-effective unless you have somebody that's Johnny on the spot. But we did away with it, and it worked to our advantage because the water bill was paid before their rent was paid so that they could never be late on the water. They were going to be late on their rent if they didn't pay the water, and that would be a penalty for them. So it works out for our advantage.
Okay. Well, that sounds interesting. Okay. So the other thing was the triple net. What is that about?
Triple net lease is they come into a property and they pay for everything to do with their unit. So that's not done in an apartment. It's more done in an office complex or a strip mall, you know, like maybe a doctor's office that has, it houses 10 doctors. They each have their own office square footage. You know, they have a reception mm-hmm. area, then they have the place where they keep their files, and then they have their little mm-hmm. Rooms to see people. So you might have 10 of them in one building. They're all on triple net lease, meaning they pay their individual lights, they pay their own taxes, they pay their own electricity, etc. The only thing that the owners pay are the common areas, which is the hallways and the parking lot and the lighting fixtures outside. So everything is taken, and it's really a sweet deal if you can find a property with triple net leases, because most of the time they are on triple net lease for 10 years or more. So always in a triple net lease means they have a lease for a certain length of time. It's usually 10 to 20 years, and they have to pay that rent until, even if they go out of business or move or do whatever, they still have to pay that monthly rent until mm-hmm. such time mm-hmm. as you can sublet. Uh-huh. But when you have triple net lease, if it's an office complex, it's not really a problem. But if you have a commercial space, like a retail space, and say you have a Dunkin' Donuts, you have a hairdressing salon, you have a dry cleaners, you have a grocery store, whatever it is, if you have somebody that moves out of that area and they're on triple net, it could take mm-hmm. almost 2 years to reconstruct whatever business that was into the new business coming in. So the good thing is the tenants that are leaving have to pay the rent until the new tenants mm-hmm. take over and go in and actually take over their lease. So it's really a beneficial thing. In fact, we have Boswell Town Center, which is in Texas, and it's got a grocery store, it's got a drive-through coffee shop, and it's got a bunch of nail salons and things like that. And we had one place leave because the competition was next door to them. They added a feature that was in direct competition to them. So they moved out, but they've been paying rent for that building for almost 2 years now because nobody's moved in. We did sublet for them this month, so we will have a new tenant and they'll be bought out of their lease, but we didn't have to do much to reconstruct.
Uh-huh. Oh, I see. Okay.
But it's a cash cow if you can get into something. Most of the government offices like Social Security, all these places, they're on triple net lease. They don't buy those buildings.
Uh-huh.
They come in there, they have a 30-year lease, and they're in there for 30 years.
That's great. That sounds like a really good deal.
In fact, J.P. Morgan takes 70% of the space we have in North Carolina. They take 70% of the space, and they have a 30-year lease. Nobody's moving out because they want to be in the area where J.P. Morgan is, because they're not going anywhere.
That's sweet. That's a sweet deal.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I've run across a couple of offers with triple net leasing, but I was looking for multifamily, so I kind of dismissed them. But
I just looked at somebody's triple net lease this morning, and the risk you find when you get a triple net lease and you go to take it over, you need to see those expiration dates So if you have the majority of your clients leaving, say, in, you know, 2019, that means you're at risk. It's much like doing a lease audit for your apartments. If you have 10 people moving out in the same month, you know you're going to be in trouble. So if you have triple net leases and their leases are up at the same time, you could be, suffocating and starving for cash flow because you're having all these people, their leases are expiring. They haven't renewed.
Yeah, you probably can get yourself in trouble. I could see that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that was pretty much it for me.
Okay, well, thank you, Alicia, and I'm sure that Andrew will come back on and give you his number so that you can explain to him the Excel deal.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Alrighty. Good talking to you. I hope to see you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Jeannie?
Yeah?
So I just got an email from Eddie Nadwani. And he said that what he uses is a program called Realty Juggler for his investors and brokers. It's only $99 a year, and it has his reminders and notes. And he said if you go to www.realtyjuggler.com, you can sign up there. It's www.realtyjuggler.com. So. Andrew, that's for you.
Okay, Jeannie, we have no further questions at the moment.
Well, that was a pretty good run there for a little bit. All you new guys that I welcomed in yesterday that were so excited to be part of the group, this is your chance to ask questions. You got Jermaine here, Paul here, me here, Jeff here, Dave's right around the corner. So you can ask any kind of questions that you want. So we have a couple of questions that were sent in. So I am going to answer a few of them. These were directed to Dave, but today is Let's Grill Jeannie.
You want me to set mine off too or no? No. Nope. I can shut it down.
They don't know if they're going to break a fuse here, so they're having us shut our computers down. So. That's just what Jermaine was talking about. So the first question comes from Mark Magnuson. So he was our investor of the week. So since going through the program, I've acquired 14 units in my area and made an offer on another building yesterday. Thanks to Ari Mental Materials, books, seminars, and UP 2018 will be the best year yet. Do you typically send reports to investors monthly or quarterly? Well, most of the time we do quarterly, but on several of our deals, we do it monthly, mainly because they cash flow so well and the reports are so timely. They come out on the 18th of the month no matter what. So we get the report, we send the check the day I send the report. The quarterly ones, we do monthly reports, but we send quarterly checks because they may have upwards of 25, 30 people in one deal because some of those deals are portfolio properties. So we do send investor checks both monthly and quarterly. So the second question is active investor documents for your deals. Do you ever need to provide an online portal for the investors actively involved in a deal about the deal performance, viewing PPMs, LLC documents, K-1s, etc. I think it's awesome if you have a portal. We will eventually have one, but we've done 38 syndications so far, and we do not have a portal. I know Maureen Miles uses a portal, and our investors love it because it's timely. They can go right on there. They don't need an admin person like myself. I take care of all day's investors. And they don't need somebody like me sending them emails with their reports. They can go in every day if they want and take a look and see how the property's doing. We ultimately will do that, but right now we don't because, after all, we We have a lot on our plates. So right now I'm sending everything by email. And I get phone calls all day long with people that have questions or want to know what's up with one property or another, and I answer them as best I can. Number three, assessing new investor commitment level. With new investors, do you use any kind of LOI or non-disclosure form or just the accredited investor form? I just get the accredited investor form, but I'm a little bit different. My memory is very long, and I remember everything. So don't tell me anything you don't want me to remember, because I will remember.
What'd you say,
so
Janie?
If somebody tells me something unique about them or their families or a situation, I'm going to remember it. So I know investors, and I know what they like and what they don't like. So it's kind of like I segment my accredited investor forms by the people that like safe and need the cash flow on a monthly, quarterly basis, away from the people that like it riskier. They don't care about the everyday cash flow. They care about the big bang at the end. So I separate them. So if I have a property that's a little bit more risky than another property, I go to them first. And vice versa, if I have a property that's steady eddy cash flow on a regular basis, I know the file I'm going to. So that's just my way of doing it. So we don't use any kind of LOI to get commitments from investors. We use the accredited investor form and the property package. And I don't send any other documents until I get a commitment from them. Here's the last one for him is on renovation. Are there any rules of thumb when budgeting a unit that needs renovation, say a two-bedroom, one-bath, 900-square-foot unit that really needs a new kitchen, bath, flooring, paint, and knowing just how far to go without gold plating it? You're going to check your competition. You don't want to put laminate flooring in at a big expense if everybody in the area is using rugs or linoleum flooring. So it's just, you want to be up to par with your neighboring communities, and you don't want to be the top of the line because they're going to go with a cheap price. No matter how pretty it is, it might be okay for them because they're a C-class tenant. So it just depends. Jermaine, do you want to add anything to that? That sounded like rough the way I said it, and I didn't mean to downplay anybody's style.
No, my recommendation would be, you know, you just want to make it livable. You don't want to make it really fancy or, you know, put in, you know, what do you call that? What do you call that on the top? The cab. Yes. Or marble countertops or anything like that. You want to make it, you know, livable and nice, but not too fancy. That would be the rule of thumb. So.
Okay. So the next operator, do we have any other questions?
No, Jeannie, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay. Just butt in when you do, because I don't mind stopping talking. Okay.
Star zero.
Okay.
It's star zero. We like questions.
This note came from Lester Rose from Jacksonville, Florida. I am looking at a few P&Ls, and I am seeing a line item called deferred maintenance. Can you give me some examples of deferred maintenance, and how does it affect the purchase price? Well, deferred maintenance could be any number of things. It could mean that the parking lot needs new striping. It could mean that the fascia boards are curling, or, you know, some of the tiles are missing. Or, you know, they're not talking about a roof. Even though a roof could be deferred maintenance, they're more talking about when they're walking the units, they're picking up things that should have been cleaned or taken care of, or maybe it could be something small like the countertops have marks on them and they need to be cleaned and taken care of or repaired. So deferred maintenance is maintenance that needs to be done before you take over the property. So you need to put that money in your CapEx figure and ask the owner for a 3% repair allowance and make an itemized list of the deferred maintenance that you see throughout. If you see cabinets with the hinges that are, you know, sideways and not put on right, or you see marks in the tub that really need to be taken care of, or maybe the floor is damaged or the carpets need replacing, that's deferred maintenance. Maintenance that people didn't pay attention to. Want to add anything, Jermaine?
The good part about deferred maintenance is that usually it's a one-time hit, so it won't be something that you probably end up doing year after year. So that's the good thing about
it. And Jeannie?
Yep.
Okay, we have a few questions. Just let me know when you're ready.
I'm ready.
We love
okay,
questions, don't we, Jeannie?
Yep.
Okay, up next we have Lorene. Lorene, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. This is Lorene Fiore from Laguna Beach. How are you?
Nice. Fine.
So my question is, I received three different properties, one very large, from a broker yesterday, and he sent me the property package, the T12, and the rent rolls. Do I run the rent roll before the LOI, or do I wait and put it in, if it meets all the criteria and all that stuff, do I need to calculate the rent roll now before I put it in the LOI?
You definitely have to put in, you have to look at the rent roll, because you want to see where the exposure is. Because right in your LOI, you're going to say you have 30 units that are due to expire in the month of August. I want those rented up, and I want to be the final determination on who you're letting in. They got to meet your criteria. So you definitely have to look at the rent roll. If you have, you know, 100 units and 30 of them are expiring in the same month, some property manager did not do their job. You're supposed to stagger those leases. Go with 13 months or 11 months, stagger them out, or, you know, get people to sign on early. Give them a menu of gifts like a new lighting fixture or an accent wall or something that they want, a gift certificate to the grocery store to get them to sign quicker. Because those are the people that are going to cost money if they move out.
Thank you. I think what I wasn't clear on, if the rent roll was done during due diligence, or if it was done before the LOI. I think that's what I needed clarity on.
Okay. The rent roll is done when you get the numbers. You want to see where your exposure is. The lease audit, making sure the people in the file folder are the same people living in the unit, that is the responsibility that goes on in due diligence. And that can make or break a property because, you know, a lot of people sublet the property and don't tell people. What you want to see when you're doing a lease audit is a copy of their driver's license. You want to see a stub from their paycheck. And you want to make sure that you have who's living in the unit. If it's a two-bedroom apartment and there's 10 people living in there, there's a danger. That's terrible.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much, Jeannie. That answers
You're
my question.
Welcome. Okay.
Plus, you want to make sure that the rent roll matches the income that they're telling you, too.
Yeah.
So that's
important.
And, you
know, sometimes they say, oh, we're 3% vacant. But when you go through the rent roll, you see every place. They might have a name there, but there's no money on the side of it. That means they're making it up or the people just aren't paying.
Okay, up next we have Eddie. Eddie, please go ahead.
Hello, Jeannie. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Eddie. How are you?
Doing really well. Yeah, I got a question on a P&L. I've got one in that looks like they've got the CapEx items mixed in with the maintenance. So, like, under plumbing, they'll have a charge like $15,000 in one month, electrical. They've got a large charge, which tells me those are probably CapEx items.
Not really CapEx, contract services. They're mixing the contract services in with the maintenance. So you need to pull that out and put it in its own bucket. So there's a place for contract services. You want to put those in there. CapEx is something that the bank is going to require you to do. And that could be, you know, they may say, you know, you have, you know, several windows that need repairing because there's air between them or they're getting condensation in the middle. They may tell you to get that fixed as part of the one-year holdback. And sometimes the bank will hold back the entire year CapEx, and they're going to expect you every quarter to get some repairs done. They'll send one of the agents out to sign off on it before they release the CapEx money back to you. So you got to have money in closing costs other to get that CapEx done. So that is something that the bank is going to tell you. This is a list of things we want you to do in the first year. And they may as well take all of your CapEx money and hold that as security to make sure you get it done in order to give you the note.
What if, like, they've rehabbed quite a few units and they've got the rehab charges in with the regular maintenance charges? When underwriting,
well, I would pull those out when you're underwriting for yourself.
Okay.
Because it's not gonna, if they've already done them, it's not going to happen next year. So I would do the underwriting two ways, one with what it is right now, one with what you're going to make it, as well as what they've already done. So you can show the difference to your investors, because that's a value play.
Okay, great. That's what we were doing, and I just wanted to make sure that's exactly what we were doing, running it two ways.
Yep, that's what I always did, is two ways.
All right, I appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay, up next we have Gary. Gary, please go ahead.
Hi, Judy, Gary Bates.
Hi, Gary, how are you?
I'm fabulous. See you in a couple of weeks at Elevate.
Yes, you will.
I just wanted to follow up, if it's helpful, on the lady that had the condominiums, the 30 out of 100. I did find a couple of properties like that, and we talked to Eric Stewart about them. He and the other lady that followed up is correct. It's called a fractured condo because you don't own the whole project, and mm-hmm. you cannot get traditional financing on that. You have to do something like maybe a conduit loan or something different. And I discussed it with Don Goff, and he said, we don't like those because we don't have control of the building.
Yeah.
So that's my only input on a fractured condo.
Well,
project.
There you go. That helps. I thank you for sharing, Gary. That's really good.
See you soon, sweetie.
See you soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, anything you want to add, Jermaine?
Gina, you are doing a fabulous job.
Oh, you say that all the time because you don't have to do it.
No, everybody wants to hear Jeannie, not Jermaine. Trust me.
So I got a question from Melvin Burrell from Atlanta, Georgia. I was looking at a deal and was unsure what to put under closing costs other. Can you give me some ideas? So we talked about that a little bit. So we'll talk about it a little bit more. If when you buy a property, you have opportunities to make it something that will increase your traffic. So say everybody in the whole area, say in Texas, there's apartments on either side of the road, up and down the street, and say everybody meets the same criteria. You want to have something that nobody else has. So maybe make a business center you know, out of part of the clubhouse. Maybe people come down, they can make copies. You'll have a Xerox machine there with a key card that they can put in that will charge them for it. You'll have a computer available. You'll be able to have like a movie area that they can, you know, rent Netflix on their TV for the night. Whatever you want to do, but a little business center will set you apart from everybody else. If everybody has the same thing, a pool, air conditioning, laminate flooring, granite countertops, you know, large open floor plan, what are you going to have that's going to be different from somebody else? Most of them have gymnasiums where people can partake. If you're in Texas, they all have a pool because it gets very hot there. But if you're in other parts of the country, you want something that will set them apart from somebody else. So closing costs other could be something like you see that the units need upkeep. Maybe they need to be spray painted. The hallways need to be cleaned. The things that you want to do to spruce up the property and make it better than it is what you put into closing costs other. You should also have 2 months of expenses and an entire year of CapEx monies in your closing costs other. So I'll just give you a for instance. I bought a property. It was 140 units. Every unit needed to be upgraded. They all had dishwashers, they all had washer-dryer hookups, they all had fireplaces, and they were big. So we wanted to make that something special. So what we did was we took out all carpeting, put in laminate flooring. We put granite countertops. We gave them washers and dryers in the units. And it was a cost that we absorbed, but they paid for it in the long run. So we did things that we wanted to make better for the tenants and make it different than anybody else in the area. And it worked out. We went from 82% occupied to 100% occupied with a waiting list within 6 weeks, 7 weeks of taking over the property. So it was just something that we did. So closing costs other is repairs that you know you want to do that are not mandatory by the bank to give you the loan. In our respect, we had a fence that was in really good condition, but we wanted it to look like the property, so we spray painted it. It cost a little bit of money, but it looked beautiful in the end, and it made people proud to be part of the community. So that's what you put in closing costs other. Any other questions, operator? She must be getting one.
Can you guys hear me? No.
Sorry, Ginny. We have one last question. Do you have time?
No problem. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Up next, we have Tim. Tim, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. This is Tim in Phoenix, and we're brand new. It's probably not a great question, but for me, I'm interested to know about the immersion outing that's scheduled in Phoenix. Can you help me understand a little bit? It looks like it's over 3 days. Looks like something that is an absolute must do. Can you give me some details as to what we can expect? How does that, you know,
sure,
play
so
out?
So Jeff Lindahl runs the immersion, and I used to do them with him, so I have full-fledged knowledge on what goes on there. So this is a place where you're going to learn how to underwrite a deal and have the confidence to know that you underwrote it perfectly and there won't be a hiccup. You're going to be able to read a rent roll, a trailing 12. You're going to meet, we hope to have a broker, a property management company, and possibly somebody from the Economic Development Committee come in, talk for 10 or 15 minutes to you, and let you know what's going on in the area. Then you can collect their cards. The next day, we go on a bus tour for 4 hours, and we view properties, some on the market, some off the market. And in my days, some of the people went back and put offers in on properties that we walked. In the afternoon, you come back, you analyze properties, and you go through rent rolls, trailing 12, so that you are top-notch, 100% good at underwriting a property, which is really the biggest hiccup most people have. Did I forget something? Did I miss something? Have I got the right answers? You're going to know you have the right answers when you're done. And Jeff gives you a power-packed weekend full of a lot of case studies and examples that you can take with you. You have two manuals that you walk out of there with that is going to really open your eyes into how we buy properties. There'll be different property packages, and you'll get a list of, you can, you know, take everybody's name and build your own team. I like to have meetup groups wherever I go, and you can build that same meetup group just from your own thing. Instead of going to the real estate investment club, which could be half single family, half condos, half anything, this you can build a meetup group. You can meet a Panera Bread or any place close by and talk about real estate and really get involved and help each other. So I think that it is a must, and I think that it's the next course of action. You go through the boot camp, which gives you an overview of the whole process, but when you get to the immersion, that's when you dive down into the actual numbers and you see what works and what doesn't work.
What an encouraging answer. Thank you.
Well, when you know something, it's easy to talk about it.
Perfect. So definitely you don't want to miss any of those days. So in all 3 days. Perfect. Okay. Excellent. Thank you.
I would say go to all three.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. So someone asked, do you have any news on the certification program? When is it supposed to be coming out? Because I can't wait to get started. Well, I've been going through it this whole week, and I believe they are sending it to everyone that got it or bought it, and it should be within the next couple of days.
Yay!
The next question comes from David Greencorn. Can you recommend a few companies to get mailing lists from? Well, Melissa Data is somebody that we recommend. You can go to melissadata.com. And I know that you can go to List Ops. You just want to make sure when you go there that you ask them when's the last time they culled through the list. Jermaine, who else do we use?
We use Claritas.
Yep.
And Dunhills.
I used to use software for Claritas. And they are excellent. They do demographics as well.
So,
Lydia, do you have any other questions?
I think that's it.
No, Jeannie, we have no further questions.
Well, if nobody has any other questions and they don't have any comments or anything they want to take part in, I'm going to say bye-bye for now. And certainly you can call Jermaine, myself, Paul, or Jeff anytime you want. You can call into the switchboard by calling 781-878-7114 and asking for either one of us. And I'll give you my direct line is 339-469-5111. I look forward to seeing you all soon and being on the next Let's Grill Jeannie call. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
All right. Have a good one.